You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yes, you're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. Here with me now, we've got Winston Peters, the New Zealand First Leader. How are you doing, Winston?
Very good, thank you.
That is awesome. So you've been down talking to some students this morning and it's all been pretty positive vibe.
We had a big rally down at the Quad and a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of questions. Pretty well received. In fact, I didn't get one heckler, which is a bit of a miracle.
Ideal. That's not what you want. So let's get into talking about some of the big issues at the moment. So to begin with, I really wanted to talk to you in general about New Zealand First going into this year's election. So recent polls have you hovering from about 8% to 11%, with National and the Labour Greens coalition pretty neck and neck. Do you think it's looking likely it will stay this way and you'll hold the balance of power post-election?
Look, the media is obsessed with this question. They think that they will control the election. They think they'll dominate the discussion. They'll think they'll write the script before the campaign's even started or before it's over. Let me just say, any poll that says we're on 8% or 11% is not a poll. They are so inaccurate. And I can prove that from the last five elections. This time out from the elections, in those last five elections, we have sometimes trebled or increased our vote by four times their projections. So if some are saying we're on 11%, you can bet we're on a whole lot better than that. Now, the second thing is, they keep on wanting to talk about coalition arrangements after the election. Why would you commit yourself when you've got no idea what thing or what policy some party might come out with, which would be so destructive for both the country and for your political party's survival? And so just not wise to do that. And third thing is, we actually happen to live in, I know your media colleagues find this hard to believe, a thing called a democracy. It goes like this. The people speak first, and then the politicians react, not the other way around. And unlike every other party that's got some pre-election arrangement, we are running by ourselves, all on our own, on our policy to maximise the vote for it. After the election, when we know what you've done as a voter, then only then can we intelligently make up our minds what to do.
Okay, so at this stage, definitely no sway one way or the other?
No. And I can say, you know, it's tragic, but here we are. It is barely getting underway March and the media are out there doing it now. The election's 23rd of September. They've got no idea what's going to happen, which politician's going to foul up big time, and you can bet they will. I mean, just recently in the French presidential elections, this guy 2 months ago was roaring up the polls. All of a sudden, out comes the scandal about funding. Down the tube he goes. Imagine that happening in the next few months in New Zealand. But sadly, I not want to just criticise the media, but I wish they'd leave off trying to be political scientists and go back to being journalists and reporters, telling all the public what the issues are, telling them both sides of the story, to use Phil Collins' famous song.
And so either way, though, your party has been quite critical of both Labour and National. So Deputy Leader Ron Mark described them as Pepsi and Coke, saying that when you take off the red and blue labels, they're both the same. So do you see this as posing problems down the line if you have to work with either of them?
It poses problems for them. Yes, you're right. let's be honest. Roger Nomics in 1984 came along, threw out their manifesto, brought out their secret neoliberal right-wing agenda and ripped this country apart and took the Labour Party almost into oblivion. And the National Party promised to get rid of it and went down the same road at greater speed. So they are Pepsi and Coke. They are the same. They're all guilty of all these politicians sitting there of having backed those policies. One party's unique in that whole scenario. That party is New Zealand First, whose leader got expelled from the party because he opposed their economic direction and got expelled from cabinet because he would not have the direction that was then reset, sold out by one called Jenny Shipley. We've got the track record of standing up for what we believe in. The rest, with the greatest respect to them, have put their own ego and promotion well ahead of the people of this country.
So you don't see New Zealand First as having to make any concessions then, if you have to work with either the Labour and Greens coalition or National Party?
Now, isn't it a funny thing? I've come to the sort of citadel of learning in this country, Auckland University, and now I'm talking about coalition agreements. Having put a prescription on to start saying, please don't waste our time doing about that. I should be talking about our exciting tertiary policy, our policy for student write-off debt, our policy to upskill students in their earlier and later life. I should be talking about the housing and rental catastrophe in Auckland, where it's got students living like living worse than animals, living in crowded accommodation. I should be talking about their parents' houses and their jobs, their security, and their retirement. But here I am, back talking about something which is not part of our campaign.
Don't worry, we'll get there. We'll get there. Don't you worry. But before we get into specifics in terms of those areas, you see that your strategy going into this year is that you want to connect with the near million Kiwis who don't vote because they're sick of politics. Would you say this stance is attempting to kind of ride the anti-establishment wave that appears to be sweeping the Western world at the moment?
Well, what a phenomenal thing for you to say. Let me tell you, I went into a by-election up north where for 78 years the National Party had won and taken these people for utterly for granted. And they had all the resources and everything going their way, and in 27 days flat, we took them out and won by thousands. Talking about sweeping the rest of the world, it's sweeping here already, and it started in Northern. And I know the media don't like it being said, but if they ever had an example of the sea change that's coming, Northern was it. Mr. Key, you remember, said he hasn't got a dog show. And 28 days later, they had lost.
So you identify with this kind of anti-establishment, almost populist sort of wave that's happening both in Britain as well as the US?
Well, here we go again. Now you're talking about being anti-populism. Now, let me ask you this question. Which parties poll every week? The National Party does, polls every week. Does that sound like populist to you? Well, it does to me. We don't poll every week. But we get accused of talking plain common sense, which I do admit is popular with ordinary New Zealanders who have been forgotten. But the party that are populists, they're the ones that are polling every darn day, every week, and Labour and National's doing exactly that, aren't they?
Mm. But identifying with those New Zealanders who have been forgotten, that's very similar to the rhetoric around the US elections with Donald Trump, as well as with the Brexit vote as well. So there definitely
and
are
the
parallels.
And the recent Australian elections. But let me tell you that something preceded all those elections. It was a by-election in a seat called Northland.
Right. And so, okay, but... That nevertheless.
What you really want to say, but don't want to say because you like the rest of the media, is that the cutting edge of change was New Zealand first. That's what I'm sure you want to say.
So it started here.
Because chronologically speaking, there's the evidence. And I wish some of your dozy mates in the media and big city media had got a fix on their job and started being reporters and journalists, not editorialists and analysts, which they're not qualified to do. Prison company accepted, of course.
So moving on, you also appear to be targeting a younger vote with some of your policies announced last year, so one to make driving a core subject at school, as well as free tertiary education. Do you feel other policies that New Zealand First has also have something to offer young people?
A whole lot of our policies. First of all those students at this university today have had three doctor's visits from the time they were born. New Zealand First is a party that gave them that. Not any other party. And the second thing is we've always had a policy for the proper funding of education. It's in our founding principles. It's the fifth founding principle that education should be seen as an investment, not a cost. And that's the problem. We are massively under-expending in education in this country. And meanwhile, you've got the government running around talking about surpluses, which is a serious deceit. But the thing that we're looking at when you're talking about university and tertiary institutions is to have a better connection between academia and the future workforce. Because one day, despite the bliss and tranquility and the sheer glamour of being a university student, you have to leave here and get a job. And we want people to come out to have a chance of getting a first world job with first world wages. And I don't think we're doing near enough to make that connection or to reskill close to their graduation for the sort of final tweak to get them the job that they want.
Mm. Right, so you're trying to sort of shift your focus more towards getting those younger voters as well, because I guess there is that common perception perhaps that New Zealand First has a lot to offer for older New Zealanders, but perhaps not so much for younger ones. So
that's because your drongoistic mates in the media have kept on painting us that way. I mean, which was the party that gave pay parity to primary school teachers? That said, we're not paying you on the side of the shoes of the pupils in front of your class, or the students in front of your class. We're paying you on academic qualifications. And if you're qualified the same as a secondary school teacher, we'll pay the same. We did that. Latchkey Kids, we funded that. A whole lot of programs New Zealand First has funded, including, as I say, free doctor's visits for young people. But if they can sort of malign you or describe you or misdescribe you as being a party full of Maori, they used to say, or a party full of old people, then they can denigrate you. And the sad thing about that is, that means they are seriously biased against old people, despite the fact that most people I know, halfway rational and sane, want to live a long time.
And so moving on to talking more in depth about one of the most important issues, I think, going into this year's election, immigration. So New Zealand First is known as having quite a strong anti-immigration stance, and you've advocated for the government to slash immigration numbers. Why is this?
Because our current policy is madness. It's running at almost four times the level of the UK, way higher than the level in the United States, way higher than the level in Australia. There is no country in the world that remotely matches our level of immigration voluntarily, and it is driving up consumption but not production. Per capita, the GDP is going up, but income per person inside that GDP is going down. That's why we're against it, because it doesn't make sense. Meanwhile, you've got massive housing shortages. You've got thousands of people living in sheer degradation and disgrace, something I never thought this country would condone, and a whole lot of people are putting up with it or looking elsewhere when they are to blame for it. Then we've also got massive gridlock on our roads, insufficient trains, insufficient public transport. Teachers are leaving Auckland because they can't afford a house. You've got huge stress on the universities. Everywhere you look, you've got massive pressure born of massive immigration. We're going to have an immigration pause. We're going to bring it to sensible levels and try and deal with the backlog, which will take us a decade to do. But let me ask you this question. If you bring in the population of Rotorua net every year, that means looking at kindergarten, secondary schools, politics, hospitals, all the things in Rotorua, you have to build that infrastructure every year in this country. Have they been doing that for the last 25 years? No. That's why we're choking here.
Is it not about finding a balance, though? I mean, analysts say migration is a key driver for the economy. Do you not agree with this?
Yeah, those analysts say that. They're apologists for this far-right-wing neoliberal experiment, which drives down wages, drives down working conditions, and suits the bosses. And they're not analysts at all. They're just mouthpieces for big business and frequently paid by them. I mean, why do we put up with night after night you put on some foreign-owned bank economist on, where they're screwing the New Zealand business and the New Zealand household and New Zealand economy? We put them on TV to tell you how good it is for you. When are you going to wake up? Not you personally, but when are your listeners going to wake up and say, hang on, that guy can't be trusted. He's a paid hireling. He's a hired gun for that sort of economic thinking. But when you say to them, okay, show me the proof that it's working, because a recent OECD report said what New Zealand is facing is a bit of a disaster. That was only 2 years ago, dismissed by the Maxim Institute as being old. The House of Lords put a report out not so long ago saying the same old thing. Then we have a catastrophic election in the UK, one in the United States, which was unbelievable, and one where in Australia, at the end of a snap election, they end up with a hung parliament. Now, when are we going to wake up to the fact that this is an unaffordable pressure that is doing our economy no real good? And this is the first time in my lifetime that incomes per person in the GDP are going down, not up.
And so other parties, though, are advocating that there's perhaps value not in capping immigration numbers necessarily, but directing migrants into the regions. What's your take on this?
They're not advocating that at all. New Zealand First was the first party to say that one of the reasons we would change the point system is to take people to the regions like they do in Canada and elsewhere. It was New Zealand First who said that, not the other parties. The other parties...
Labour's stance.
They're not getting off... No, they're not going to get away like that. These other parties all said that New Zealand First was xenophobic, Hitlerite, Nazi-ite, fascist, and every other thing they said about us and called us racist. And all of a sudden they realise they're out of step with the New Zealand public and they want to jump on board having just about stuffed the country with their condemnation of a stupid policy in the past. My job is to remind New Zealanders just how it happened and just which parties are going to be responsible. They're not getting away with that.
And so you are saying that you are an advocate of directing migrants into the regions? Is that what you're saying?
No. The only reason why you haven't heard that before is the media decide to print what I think I said rather than to print what I did say. I've given that speech over and over and over again.
So that's a yes.
Well, take a wild guess.
Just moving on to our next topic, housing. We're reaching crisis levels around the country, particularly in Auckland. How will New Zealand First address this?
We're going to have us, as I said, we're going to cut back demand. Anyone that doesn't intend to do that is just talking bulldust. We're going to cut back demand. We're going to stop offshore buying. We're going to put in a policy in place to ensure that those offshore buyers are not going to be advantaged by their speculation, just like Vancouver did recently in Canada. And then we're going to ensure that not speculators and land speculators at that will buy the land. And we'll get the builders to build the thing in the way that we used to do, in a way that was affordable. If you don't make those five changes, then any promise you make in this campaign is meaningless.
And so that will, so someone like myself, I mean, buying a house at the moment is a pipe dream, really. Like, I'm 24 and things are so expensive in the city that I live in. I'm just wondering how your policies help someone like me.
Well, here's the most fascinating thing. These other parties don't understand and won't admit it. They're too scared. In fact, many of them got a soft heart and a head to match. You know that. But there's going to be a crash in house prices in the city. That's absolutely inevitable. None of these experts appear to say that. All too scared to say it. But do we think this South Pacific bubble can go on? And then in our share market, here comes another crash coming, because the ratios of earnings to, you know, actual value are now past 30 to 1. This is dream time. You know, it's so off the planet, and there's always going to be a day of reckoning. There was in 2007-08, there was in 1991, there wasn't one in 1987. It just happened so fast. But what we got is a whole lot of people in the commercial world dare not say what they see, because if they do, they say that people might lose confidence and it'll happen. It's going to happen anyway.
Okay, so you're saying that there will be a crash and then things will sort themselves out, or will New Zealand First
hopefully after that time, some sanity prevails in our politics. Not what happened last time. So there's a crash in 2007, 2008. What happened? Down the same track, the same old faces in the same old places, all with the same old snouts and feet in the trough. All subsidised, guess by who? The taxpayer. We're not going to have that again. And the people don't want that. Then I suggest they vote for New Zealand First, the one party that understands the condition.
And so in terms of the unitary plan in Auckland, are you on board with this and aspects of it that advocates increased housing density?
Well, parts of it I am, parts of it I aren't. But let me just say it about this plan in Auckland. Not one of those local government politicians had the guts to say what was wrong with the whole thing in the first place. That mass immigration is killing the city. If they don't understand the condition, you can bet your bottom dollar, like a doctor, they won't analyse what was required to heal the situation.
And so just because we're running quite over time into Penny's show, but just really quickly...
Forget about Penny's show, this is so much more important.
Finally, let's talk about crime. So last month the government announced a policy to devote $500 million to fight crime and to boost police officers. Were you pleased with this move?
Well, look, it's window dressing. And you ask me, am I pleased with this move? No, I'm not pleased with deception. I'm not pleased with rank hypocrisy. In 2009, the National Party gets in and caps police numbers. No more new policemen coming on. Put a cap on it, right? Then they argued for 8 long years that crime was falling. A total lie. What was happening was that they were catching people, but rather than charging them, they were warning them. Bit like fishing catch and release policy. Then all of a sudden they realised burglaries are 90% unresolved. Up north, 97% unresolved. This could be a political issue in election year, so better go and get some more frontline police. 880 over the next 4 years is not even half of what's required now. We need 1,800 new police frontline as fast as possible. And before you ask, well, what's your record? Well, the last time I had any control in this country, we got 1,000 frontline police men and women, 1,000, and 235 backup people all in the space of 3 years flat. That is a policy. What they're doing is tinkering.
Right, so you're saying it's not enough, needs to be...
Not nearly enough, no, because we need to head to parity. Like, for example, there's parity to 1,000 like Australia's got. Look at South Auckland and all around Auckland, up north and what have you. The number of dairies have been burgled, murdered, seriously injured. The violence that goes on. There's a guy just up the road from me, Hikarangi, his name is Hermantin Lal. A great guy, fine Fijian, responsible family. They couldn't find a more polite guy. He's been burgled 9 times and assaulted in the last time. He was seriously in hospital. His offenders... 2 of them got home detention. Don't tell the National Party serious about crime.
And so is it just about boosting police numbers, though, or are there other measures to be able to, you know, stop crime from happening?
I'm glad you asked that question, because the biggest thing is that we need a cultural renaissance or reawakening in the Maori world about self-responsibility. The biggest thing would change this if we can change the dichotomy and the anatomy, socially speaking, of the Maori world. Because... alongside numbers, they're the biggest offenders. I'm part Maori myself. I'm not dodging the question. But until we reinstill a cultural awareness and responsibility, we are still going to have a big problem in our country. But my quid pro quo for that is we're going to have to create serious employment in the provinces in particular, and in places like South Auckland, get people off the streets and back into work. That's why we are for work programs.
So with the Māori self-responsibility aspect, you're saying this is something that Māori should take on board themselves, or does it not go wider in terms of, I don't know, police bias, for example, or bias in other sorts of other systemic sorts of bias as well?
Look, that's just lefty nonsense about police bias. Guess what colour the police are they're making that allegation about? They happen to be Māori themselves. It won't wash. I've seen it up north. All this humbug. The truth of the matter is, you know, the police aren't perfect. The legal profession is not perfect. Nothing is. But on the whole, the police are responsible, doing the best job they can in very trying circumstances and massively under-resourced. So we're going to fix that up. And in the Māori world, we've got to, as I say, confront Māoridom head on and say, only you can change it. And truly, the educational outcomes, and that's one of the reasons why we place so much store on focusing so many of our programs on young Māori women. It happens to be in Polynesian society that women do most of the work. I'm not being sexist here, but because of that, I place greater faith in reform programs with Māori and Polynesian women than I do with men. The men, in many cases, as you well know, poshing around the marae, all like peacocks, never do anything. And many of them in the Māori world have got their snouts in the trough while they're at their people's expense, and there's no trickle down at all. We're going to change all that. And that's why New Zealand First has a lot of people who are in it who are Māori, and we all think the same. We don't go for the Māori seats. We don't go for this, that, and the other thing. We want equality of opportunity, not results. We want a fair society, and we're prepared to deliver for everybody else as well.
Mm. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us in the studio today, Winston.
Thank you very much.
It's been very nice to meet you.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.